Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
We have analysis, and we're hearing your reaction to the Mueller report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It was a 22-month investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election, and we learned from Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report that there wasn't obstruction of justice, but it also doesn't exonerate President Trump. We know sensitive information was redacted by Justice Department lawyers and the Special Counsel's office, but more than a third of the report pages contain at least one blacked out word. Most of the pages have no redactions. Some are almost entirely blacked out. Did you get what you needed out of the report, or is there more to investigate? What are your thoughts on obstruction of justice? What do you want to see happen next? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Elisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. She studies women in politics, political behavior, and biomedical policy. Elisa, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me this morning. It's great to be here.
So what do we know now with this huge, expansive report that we didn't learn from Attorney General William Barr's summary at his press conference yesterday morning?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So at his press conference, he noted that specifically that in terms of the decision to not prosecute or to make the decision not to prosecute was based upon, he claimed that there was basis for making that decision in the report. However, when we read the report, we see that Mueller was very much took the time to point out that he was restrained by the DOJ guidelines that precluded them from prosecuting a sitting president. And so, in a way, I think Barr really misled in terms of his press conferences in that yesterday morning in trying to insinuate that the facts, the details, the report itself fully exonerates the president from this question of coordination or conspiracy with Russia, when really he's saying we're not exonerating the president. However, our hands are tied with respect to, you know, prosecuting or leveling charges at the president. So so there's a little bit of misinformation going on there at the press conference, then, anyway.
Did Barr distill it too much for the American people at the press conference?
In distilling it too much, I think he certainly kept to certain talking points that led the general public to presume that the report, if not fully exonerated the president, very much explained most of the actions. And while some of it is, you know, quite egregious, or, you know, in terms of what the president has done or what the investigation shows, he painted it as a angry, frustrated president who was just concerned about his presidency, when in fact there were numerous times where he, again, misled the public in terms of, you know, what actually had transpired during the investigation, the involvement or lack of involvement by the president, and generally the, you know, overall tenor or the outcome of what the report stated.
Did we get more clarity from the report on Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election? Are there things in there that we understand more about what happened with that?
Well, I think we get a more clear picture of all of the different actions that were going on. I mean, it is so, so much. That's the section of the report that I spent most of yesterday reading, and it is just mind-boggling, the amount of activities, whether it's through social media, whether it was the hacking of the emails, and then giving them to WikiLeaks, we just have a better picture of the whole huge scope of the that all that activity that was going on. And also, I think we have a more clear and more definitive picture of the aides close to the president that were, if not in favor and support of this, were actually working with or talking to different Russians during this time period when this activity was occurring. So I think we just have a much, much, deeper look into all that was happening. And it's a lot.
It's a lot to take in. Talking with Elisa von Hagel, she's an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. Day after the Mueller report has come out, as it's come out to the American public and to Congress, digesting those 448 pages, a lot in there. You can join in with your thoughts on it. Have you taken a look at it? We're at 800-642-1234. What are your takeaways from the Mueller report? What about obstruction of justice? Were you surprised at all by the Russian involvement in the 2016 election? What stuck out to you? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Elisa, the redacted report has 100 pages of contacts between the Trump campaign associates and Russians. What have we learned from this extensive list of contacts?
We have learned, again, the individuals that were primarily involved, the interactions that they had in terms of meetings that were set up or, attended or maybe perhaps set up and then they did not attend. There's more information regarding the context, the decisions, or just the topics at hand. And also, I think, so we just have more of a picture of the network of activities going on and who was more directly involved, who was, less directly involved, and also the activities of the president with respect to business dealings in Russia as well. So there's, many, many different angles, and I think the report did a pretty good job of, clearly, painting a narrative or a picture of these different themes in this giant web of interactions and activities with the Russians.
Right. So you have to kind of pull this web apart, the business connections, the offers of assistance to the campaign, the invitations for campaign members and Russian government representatives to meet. And so this report then is able to kind of take each of those pieces apart.
Right. Well, or it very clearly, outlines, the time frame, the chronology of when and where the first contacts were made for each of those different components, who was involved. And oftentimes it's overlapping individuals, people who are often seen in a lot of these interactions. Sometimes it's, different, a range of different advisors or, campaign workers. But certainly it provides a very good chronology of the time frame in terms of that first interaction moving towards planning to meetings and further communications or, again, even interactions between members of the campaign talking about the, Russian interference and, just speaking about its occurrence, whether or not they were actively taking part in, planning or working with the Russians with respect to the social media or the hacking. I guess the hacking more so specifically.
And the word collusion came up as well. And Mueller concluded, this didn't add up to the Trump campaign conspiring or coordinating with the Russian government.
Right. And so collusion that we often hear being discussed or thrown out there is not a legal term. It's not a crime. And so they do have to prove coordination or conspiracy, which has a very, very high bar to meet. And so it has to show that the two parties had the same intention to engage in certain activity for this, nefarious outcome of sorts. And so it's a fairly high bar to meet in terms of having the evidence of both sides being on board, agreeing, and then having the intent, also clearly demonstrated with facts or with evidence. And so that just simply wasn't something that this report was able to prove.
Elisa von Hagel is with us as our guide, associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. Getting your takeaways on the Mueller report, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're getting your reaction to the Mueller report here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Members of Congress and the public can read what Special Counsel Robert Mueller and his team of investigators found in their 22-month probe into Russia's interference in the 2016 election. Couple questions to consider. What surprises are in the two thick volumes released by the Justice Department? And given Attorney General William Barr's decision not to pursue any charges, which of Mueller's findings will end up mattering the most for President Trump's time in office? Join in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Elisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior, and she stays with us. Elisa, so does the report say whether Trump associates were aware of Russia's attempts to interfere in the election? What do we know there?
Yes, we do know that his aides were very much aware of the efforts of the Russian government and or of Russian involvement, and they were they welcomed it. You know, perhaps they did not actively coordinate with Moscow for this activity, but certainly it is very clear that they are very much aware, and specifically with WikiLeaks, were very much involved in bringing that information, that the emails that were hacked to WikiLeaks, and providing that information. So they were very much aware of what was going on.
Well, let's look at this issue of obstruction of justice. Mueller says in the report that the president did not commit criminal obstruction of justice, but Mueller also says he wouldn't exonerate the president. You know, wasn't it Mueller's job to decide whether the president committed a crime? So how is it possible that there is no collusion or no conclusion on this?
Well, so he states that if he were able to demonstrate that the president did not obstruct justice, he would so declare that, in fact. And so he's saying that, in fact, that, you know, if the president was in the clear, we would say that. However, based upon their guidelines, there is a concern and has been thus so written out in the DOJ guidelines that the indictment of a sitting president holds numerous concerns, whether it's respect to fairness, obviously, you know, the idea of having a fair trial, or while a president is in office, is something that is very problematic. And so so they do have a guideline regarding the indictment of against the indictment of a sitting president. However, he's also saying that it's quite clear that, you know, we are not exonerating the president. And so to me, I think that sends a clear statement that he's kicking this to Congress and saying, this is as much as I can do. I can provide this report and this information, and I'm, you know, my hands are tied in terms of, you know, doing anything more with respect to moving on with, you know, these obstruction of justice charges.
And Attorney General William Barr exonerated the president in his own summary that came out earlier this month. And he certainly stressed that yesterday, supporting the president in his news conference.
Absolutely. So he's very much part of this political, you know, campaign or this administration in. And he very much so made very numerous egregious attempts to run interference for the president and did misrepresent the findings of the report of what Mueller wrote, and by having this press report before the report came out, he was able to once again set it up the narrative or the story as one that exonerates the president, and you know, giving the assumption that most individuals, if you know, pretty much everybody, doesn't have time to read 448 pages for all of the specific details, that one is, you know, perhaps inclined to just accept what the attorney general has stated.
Talking with Elisa von Hagel, a professor of political science at UW-Superior, looking at day after Mueller report. Let's go to the phones now with Jerry joining us from Waterford. Hi, Jerry. What's on your mind about the Mueller report?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate that. One thing that I'm concerned about with this conversation and the conversation in general and the nation is the fact that We forget that the president is elected by we the people, and that means the people in the aggregate, and that's according to the Constitution for 240 years. And I personally did not support the president initially. But however, we have to realize that he is our president. As James Comey said, we got to be careful how we handle this situation. Otherwise, people are going to think there's a coup taking place here, a coup d'etat. And so isn't that the case? It seems to me like the media is going out of their way to spin this thing to make it as negative as possible. And we have to get on with the work of the country. And if you go back to 1864 and 1865, when President Lincoln was running, this same type of thing came up. And what they were saying about Lincoln was exactly what they're saying about Trump. Of course, there wasn't the Russian situation up then. But
Jerry, thank you for those thoughts. And it sounds like what Jerry's saying there, Elisa, in part, is that there is this feeding frenzy going on as we get this huge report to the American people.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. And it is very hyper politicized, as is, you know, pretty much anything that is remotely political today in this day and age. And certainly this is the same thing. And I think the caller raises a good point that, you know, this isn't the first time we've been here. We because of our divided government, of this hyper polarization and partisanship, we have these type of investigations over and over and over again. There were, you know, more than five under the Obama administration, certainly different types of investigations. There were similar ones under the Bush administration, under Clinton. And, you know, we have these investigations that are perceived and perhaps at times are very much so driven by politics. And certainly, I agree in that it does take away from the, you know, the governing of this country, of the dealing with issues. And what with our divided government and the way that our system has been constructed at this point, it's, you know, how we're going to be able to move beyond that or to, you know, alleviate some of these very politicized investigations. It's hard to tell.
Let's go to Dick joining us from Madison. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning. I'm kind of confused by this. A sitting president can't be indicted. Part of what he does when he takes the oath of office is says he's going to, you know, uphold the Constitution. And a very big part of that is the fact that no person in this country is above the law, including the president. So I kind of find this funny. And then when they talk about the obstruction of justice, I mean, all he did was look for ways that he could, you know, hold back information, try and skew how people talk to the Mueller team. And if that's not obstruction of justice, I don't know what is.
Go ahead, Elisa.
Sorry, yeah, if I could respond to the caller. So Mueller does point or does note in his report that while the DOJ guidelines have, you know, issued this guidance, this policy for not indicting a sitting president for a number of reasons, he does clarify, he does state that this doesn't preclude indictment following an administration, that these criminal actions, if they are in fact criminal actions or charges that could be leveled against the president, could be done so after his term in office. And so there certainly is impeachment if the crimes or allegations are severe enough, which is obviously a political process going through with the House and the Senate. However, with respect to, you know, criminal prosecution, he does specify in the report that while his hands are tied with respect to the indictment of a sitting president, that he just wanted to remind everyone that you can certainly indict a president after his term in office. And so whether or not that is, problematic, as your caller noted, it's certainly, I think, something that people should discuss and to weigh in on and consider. But as currently the policies or guidelines are stated, that is simply what tied the hands of Mueller in writing this report.
There have been charges, though. There are 14 other ongoing investigations, right?
Yes. So he has given 14 other investigations away to other agencies in the FBI and the DOJ two of which we know, but there's still 12 that are that were redacted that are we don't know yet. So, I mean, there are other investigations going on at this point that were raised by the when in the course of the investigation of the Mueller report. And there's also, of course, the all of the cases going on in the state of New York against the sitting president. So, I mean, there's a whole framework network, another web of indictments, of investigations going on. So this isn't a, you know, complete and total exoneration of, you know, everything that the president had did has done. And, you know, we'll just start over as new. They will continue to investigate these other, you know, allegations. And so this isn't going to be the end. We will certainly see more of this or more information about this.
We're talking this hour about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report, getting your reaction to yesterday's release of the 448-page report. We're at 800-642-1234, and political scientist Elisa von Hagel is our guide from UW-Superior. Call in with your thoughts. If you look through the report, what did you make of it? News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with you about your takeaways from the Mueller report and getting analysis. The report makes clear that the investigation did not establish a conspiracy involving Trump associates and the Russian government to interfere with the 2016 election. Did the release of the Mueller report change anything for you, change your opinions about the president or any other politicians? Did it confirm what you already thought? Do you think Congress should investigate the instances listed in the report where the president potentially obstructed justice? Or do we need to move on here? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. UW-Superior political scientist Elisa von Hagel stays with us. And so, Elisa, what do we know about the kind of information that was left out of this public report, the redacted items?
So there were different categories for the redactions. We know that grand jury material was precluded from this particular report, as well as harmful materials to an individual, and things that pointed to internal investigative techniques. And so Congress has been really hammering at the Attorney General for release of the full report. And they argue that they need the full report in order to ensure that they are doing their job properly of overseeing the executive branch. And at this point, it seems that an agreement has been made that certain members of Congress, a bipartisan group of members of Congress, all of whom have the appropriate security clearances, will have access to this unredacted report to make, you know, those final determinations. So, again, we'll hopefully, I guess, have some summaries or overall reports from those members of Congress after their conclusions of the text occur.
And we've just learned that the House Judiciary Committee has sent a subpoena for the entire report. What do you make of that?
Well, I think what's interesting is that not only are they subpoenaing the entire report, but also you have heard Jerry Nadler of the Judiciary Committee, but also numerous other members of Congress emphasizing the desire to want to have Mueller come and speak before them, that, you know, this report is such a interesting narrative of, you know, the course of events. And it seems to, you know, implicate or that, you know, that are pushed the ball in the Congress's court with respect to moving forward with any further steps of, you know, again, in response to these claims or these allegations. And so the decision to have Mueller come to and testify before the court or sorry, testify before Congress, uh-huh, would be a very interesting look into sort of his perceptions and his overall sort of his takeaways from writing this report and wanting to see where it goes next, you know, with respect to Congress's oversight functions.
Let's go to Savannah now in Ashland. Hi, Savannah.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So some of the most interesting pages of the Mueller report to me were pages 428 through 439, which are Trump's answers to Mueller's questions. I found it interesting that there was a lot of I do not recall type answers in there. And additionally, I found that the dialogue and the syntax that was used in those answers was not typical of Donald Trump. I think that those answers were written by his lawyers, and I just interesting to me also that he didn't have to come up, before a panel and orally give these answers. He was allowed to give them in writing so that his lawyers could do all the talking. And I think it just speaks to the covering up that's being done here by Trump.
Thank you, Savannah. Alisa, what do you make of that?
Yeah, so he did refuse to attend or come to the committee for testimony. And I think, it's interesting. I remember in the course of the investigation, when this was occurring and hearing commentators speak about, the potential of Trump testifying before this investigative committee. And I remember just hearing, like, there's absolutely no way in hell that his lawyers are going to let him do that. And so I think given his, his natural speaking style and his, use for hyperbole and, making grandiose statements or claims that he necessarily doesn't see as, fully truthful, is something that was concerning for his lawyers, and specifically with testifying before this investigative team. And so, the Mueller does write a note or, talks about that they could have pursued further legal actions to require the president to attend. But again, he's very much wanting to ensure that, not pushing the envelope, not making this overly politicized, and I guess simply accepting the written testimony as is at this point. And certainly there's, as the caller noted, there is a lot of the, I do not recall, I do not, remember. But that's true of a lot of the testimony from different individuals that were brought before this committee for the commission of this report. And so there are a lot of facts and details that are still just simply unknown and we will not probably know ever at this point.
Let's go to Sarah now in Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. My question is that a friend, someone I know who read the report said that the report said that Mueller did find a lot of evidence of obstruction of justice, but one of the reasons that, well, other than you can't indict a sitting president, supposedly, he said that in order to make an obstruction charge stick, you had to prove intent to obstruct rather than just doing it, and that Mueller couldn't, it's almost impossible to find intent. And I wonder if that is how you see it, too.
Sarah, thanks. What about proving intent?
Certainly. So, that is a very high legal bar to meet with respect to demonstrating that, one specific action was clearly predicated based upon this particular desire. I mean, we very rarely see, someone's written, email or, diary that says, I am doing this action in order to cause, X outcome. And so demonstrating intent is very, very difficult. And while a lot of people, for a number of the obstruction of justice charges that were brought against the president, when we see in the report and has been talked about, a number of Trump's tweets have been used as examples or, pointing to potentially his intent or motivation at the time. But in terms of for each and every obstruction of justice charge, clearly laying out a very clear, demonstrable evidentiary proof of the intent to engage in obstruction of justice is really quite very, very difficult to do.
We're talking with UW Superior political scientist Elisa von Hagel, looking through the Mueller report released yesterday, with your thoughts along the way at 800-642-1234. Have you paged through this report? Have you been reading it? What are you digesting? What are your takeaways? Do you think Congress should investigate the instances listed in the report where the president potentially obstructed justice? Or do we need to move on here? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Well, let's hear the president's reaction to the release of the report. Here he is yesterday speaking at a Wounded Warrior event in the White House.
I'm having a good day, too. It was called No Collusion, No Obstruction.
So the president went on to call the investigation a hoax that another president should never have to go through. Elisa, what kind of reactions have we been hearing from Republican leadership on this?
I think it's interesting. The reactions from both Republicans and the Democrats are exactly what we would expect. Republicans are overwhelmingly coming out in support and, you know, either stating that, you know, we just simply need to move on and to continue on. Some are also wanting to investigator to look into, you know, the basis for the beginnings of this investigation and to inquire into that. But we see a very clear partisan divide where Republicans are still very much on board with the president and find this report as an exoneration or, a clearing of the president's record.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said in a statement, Democrats want to keep searching for imaginary evidence that supports their claims, but it is simply not there. How is Democratic leadership reacting?
They are, again, reacting as expected, and they are being cautious. The leadership has been very clear in stating that, you know, in terms of proceeding with impeachment, that there are a few, measures or high bars that need to be met, including a shift in public opinion and having bipartisan support to move forward with impeachment. And so we are simply clearly not there yet with respect to impeachment proceedings. And so how they will proceed, I think we can assume that they will proceed with the committee hearings into these other matters, whether it's the tax filings or other issues that have been raised. And so I think those types of hearings and investigations will continue. But impeachment proceedings as of, right now, it does not look like the leadership is eager to directly head straight to impeachment at this moment.
We're getting takeaways on the Mueller report, the culmination of this 22-month investigation and the 448-page report that Congress and the public were able to start digesting yesterday. Where do we go from here? Do you want Mueller to testify before Congress? Join in 800-642-1234. Email your thoughts on the report to ideas@WPR.org. Political scientist Elisa von Hagel stays with us from UW Superior. We will be back in just a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the Mueller report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democrats are requesting that special counsel Robert Mueller appear before Congress to testify on his investigation into Russian interference in the election, 2016 election. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff formally invited Mueller to appear before his panel to discuss the investigation sometime next month. And then the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Gerald Nadler, just this morning subpoenaed the full findings of the report. What do you think? Should Mueller testify? Do you think Congress should investigate, or should the American public and lawmakers move on? Do you think Attorney General William Barr was protecting the president or doing his job? Let's go through this. 800-642-1234. Elisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science at UW Superior, and she stays with us. Alisa, let's move on to how Wisconsin lawmakers are reacting to the Mueller report. Here is U.S. Representative Gwen Moore talking to WPR's Danielle Kading. Moore is a Democrat who represents Wisconsin's 4th District.
Just a few excerpts that I was able to read, it said that there was substantial evidence that the president attempted to prevent the investigation into his campaign and into his own conduct.
So is this a line of thinking we're hearing a lot from Democrats, including here in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. So we see the same division between Republicans and Democrats nationwide as we do here in Wisconsin, where Wisconsin Republicans have been coming out in support of the president, wanting to, as you we stated before, move on, drop it, or, you know, investigate the investigators further, while Democrats are certainly more inclined to want to investigate many of these allegations deeper and to get a bigger picture of, what was happening based upon their role as or their power to oversee the executive branch.
We've also been hearing just a chorus of Democrats reacting and sharply criticizing Attorney General Barr. At the same time, it's the Justice Department's job to make decisions, and that's what Barr did in his initial summary of the report when he said the president did not obstruct justice. And the Attorney General has become this political lightning rod in this evolution of this investigation. How should we understand his role?
Right. So based upon his actions in terms of his summary of the report that he gave to the public and members of Congress initially after the report just came out, those 4 pages, and even the report that he submitted that he did not need to submit when he was going through his when he was becoming appointed to this particular office, and his actions thus forth as in the press release and all of those things combined, he does very much show himself to be very much a, part of this Trump administration and willing to go out on a limb to defend the president and to, if not, obfuscate, certainly, portray certain things as beneficial to the president if, in fact, upon further reading, we find that it's perhaps not quite so the case.
Let's go to John now, joining us from Janesville. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind about the Mueller report?
I think all we've heard is fluff. I don't think that we've heard any of the meat of it. And then for him to come on and being arrogant and saying that he's been cleared of everything, we haven't heard anything yet. And his taxes were supposed to be shown by now. They aren't done. I just think that he's jacking around with the public too much.
Attorney General Barr gave the White House legal team access to this report before it was publicly released. Is that significant, Alisa?
There has been a lot of attention paid to that and a lot of criticism to that in terms of giving, the president's team time to craft their own narrative and to essentially strike first or to be the first to create the narrative of the report prior to, the general public or Congress having the ability to, read it themselves and to determine for themselves. And so by creating that first overarching narrative of the report, it very much affects the way that the general public will see the findings of, the Mueller report, of further investigations of if Mueller testifies before Congress. That is all going to be, weighed against this overarching narrative that was established by Barr and the Trump team as well prior to the release of this report. So it is very important and very essential for setting this tone for the president to claim that he was fully exonerated and there was no collusion and no obstruction.
Well, let's go to Mary now in Milwaukee. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. I have a statement and kind of a rhetorical statement, and from a person who in another life spent most of their time reviewing resumes to hire people in management situations, and I'm retired now. But my question to your guest and to you is, would somebody, and to the audience really, if you read a resume that contained the kind of information that we see in the Mueller report, and I've only read a very small part of it, that indicated that somebody was directing people to break the law or to lie to law enforcement, would you want them working in your organization? And I'll wait for my answer off the line.
And as Mary is saying, there are a lot of implications in this report for a number of different people in politics.
Absolutely. And there's been indictments and charges brought against members of Trump's campaign team. We've had 5 out of the 6 prosecuted thus forth. There's been I believe, over 20 Russians that have been charged with related to this investigation, and there's more to come, no doubt. And certainly it is very damning with respect to the, I guess, integrity or character of the presidency, if you look at it from that perspective. But one thing that comes across, and you hear a lot of commentators already mentioning that, that with respect to the obstruction, the president's efforts to influence the investigation were mostly unsuccessful. So he was unable to obstruct, mostly because the people surrounding him wouldn't allow him to do so. And so in a way that almost, I don't know if that's better or worse for your caller, but to consider, but that he did have these perhaps motivations to obstruct, but those around him basically kept him or stopped the president from, you know, engaging in direct actions that were clearly going to be seen as obstructions of justice. So, again, I don't know if that's good or bad, but
there it is. We have just time for one more comment on this report. Let's go to Mark now in La Crosse with some thoughts. Mark, hi.
Hi, good morning. So I heard the comment made earlier by your guest and then just recently just now that, in her opinion, Barr is acting as a partisan and covering for the Trump administration. And it's pure conjecture, and I think it gives away the partisanship of your guest. I mean, a number of pundits have commented that Barr has had a distinguished legal career, was DOJ previously, and the notion that he would come out of retirement to take the job to cover for Donald Trump and risk ruining his reputation in the process, reputation for a lifetime of work, is pretty ridiculous. So I felt it was important to push back on that. I think it's just a very partisan thing to say, and it's pure conjecture.
Mark, thanks for those thoughts. The integrity of Barr here, Elisa?
Right, and there, those points were very much raised during his confirmation hearing, his work prior to this under previous administrations, and he was seen as very objective and somebody who was there willing to serve the administration for the good of the American people. It was very much that portrait or the general picture that we had of Barr in his earlier confirmation hearings based upon his prior work. And as was noted, he came out of retirement for this position. And that was the sort of, I guess, assumption overall that would lead to his appointment. In terms of his current actions and, you know, their relationship to demonstrating his affiliation or allegiance to the Trump administration, I guess, in terms of his, you know, outright lies, if not, obfuscation of facts is really, I think, the most important point to note, that he was, you know, very much so misrepresenting the report. And that is important for the American people to know.
Elisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Elisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior, joining us from our WPR studios in Superior. Just ahead, On Point is live with a review of this week's news, reading the Mueller report, North Korea, Notre Dame, and more. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.